You are listening to the Technical SEO Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Tech SEO Podcast, where we explore technical SEO and everything that comes with it. My name is Kira Davidson, and I'm an SEO consultant at Salt. And today I'm joined by Miriam Jessier, an SEO trainer at Pragma. Welcome to the podcast, and how are you doing?
Very good. Happy to be here.
I'm so delighted you could join us. I can't wait to talk about image optimization. I definitely think I've got a lot to learn on that. So before we get started, I think it'd be great to learn a bit more about you. So how have you managed to get to this point in your career as you are today?
Ooh, I got started a very long time ago before SEO was a huge industry. So I remember what a 56K modem sounds like. And when I went to school, there was nobody to teach SEO. And I realized while building websites as a young person, I mean, very young, 9 or 10 years old, I had my first website, and I was pretty annoyed because you couldn't find it on the internet. I was going to say in Google, but Google didn't exist back then. So we had a few other sad options. And one of the jokes that I like to make is, back in the days, you could look for a washing machine, a bathing suit, a dinosaur, you would still end up with adult websites in the search results. That's how bad search was. And little by little, I got into this game of positioning my content, continued with my life, went to school, realized, oh my hobby is a job, a well-paying job. Amazing. Let me just escape a life of planned poverty with my beautiful degree that is shiny and worthless and move on to my hobby as my main career. And here I am today. 15 years later, it got to the point where I'm privileged enough to work with the companies I want to work with, pick my clients, and also train other SEOs to do what I do. And that's what I love to do today.
Really interesting how you said you started building sites from such a young age. I'm seeing a reoccurring theme with people that I'm speaking with, that they all start in some degree designing websites or building websites, and then they ultimately discover SEO, and that's where they end up ending eventually.
It's just to clarify, I am a catastrophe when it comes to design. You do not want me building a website. My code will just be spaghetti code. It will be awful. But I like to take things apart, and I like to know how they work, and I like to communicate that knowledge. And the best way to get into SEO is to have that curiosity to figure out how things work. And as a parallel, I need to say this. I started doing SEO back when duplicate content was not a problem. Everybody stole everyone else's content. And I was hired to do SEO content. So imagine how little value was placed on my job. And I quickly switched to what I knew best from my hobby, which was, okay, what about the code bits? Why is the website not read, etc.? So even if you start building websites or just from content, there's always a way to dive into how do bots work and how can I get more visibility. And I think that curiosity is like the pivot key to everyone. Like if you love SEO, it's just like you love figuring out how things work in the world.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think you often find yourself going down rabbit holes unintentionally. Oh, yeah. And then the next thing you know, it's lunchtime. So I think obviously
or having midnight.
Yeah, one of the two. So yeah, curiosity is definitely key. So in your day job, you're an SEO trainer. Is it at all possible you're able to elaborate on that, what that typical day might look like for you?
So we're going to navigate around the NDA minefield, because obviously quite a few companies that hire me don't want it to be known I train them, or don't want it to be known what I train them on. So being a trainer can take different forms for me. I taught courses in universities, and while I loved it, the bureaucratic aspect of it was driving me up the wall. And I get to teach in established companies that basically are just training centers. I teach agencies their own programs, and I teach like marketing departments in companies that call me up. So that's a wide array of students. That's a wide array of needs. And I never get bored because it's kind of like handling SEO as a disco ball. Each facet, I revisit it, but it's like a different type of shiny each time. So I never get bored, and I truly get to learn the fundamentals of what we do. And that's something that when you get into SEO, you feel like you're following the Betty Crocker cake recipe, like add powder, add egg, mix, bake, and you're like, I hope the cake comes out okay. You have no clue what chemical reactions happen in there. You have no clue what's in the cake. You just hope the cake is good and looks nice. And it gets very terrifying after a while. And that's why curiosity is important. You have to understand what underlies this whole cake making operation. How does it truly work? And I get to teach that to other people, but I also always get to reinforce it for myself. That's a really amazing position to be in.
Definitely. You're constantly getting different challenges, which keeps it interesting for you.
Oh yes, and I get to see a lot of horror stories that make great anecdotes when I meet other SEO colleagues.
Even better then, something to yes. have fun about. So before we started recording this, I was just touching upon the fact of my knowledge around image optimization. It's the standard sort of alt text, file naming, and like image compression, lazy loading, those kind of things. And we were talking about how I've got enough to survive as an SEO, but there's so much more to know about. So I think that's a good place of where we should start. Like, so ultimately, why should we care about image optimization? Why should I put more effort in or more attention into knowing more about it?
So that's almost an existential question, because nobody has to care about anything in SEO until you start realizing there's a world of opportunities. So, you know, the famous, it depends. Well, it really does depend. Some websites, they just use stock photos. They're sad. The client doesn't have a desire to move past that. Are you going to be able to get great traction from this? No, please focus on something else. However, if you're in e-commerce, that's very important, because more and more today, people are just going to type in, let's say you look for a lilac sweater. The first results are not what you would expect. It's just a carousel of pictures from Google Image, because people want to see what it looks like. And if you click on it, you get to see that this product is actually in stock. It costs this much because, you know, markup. So you have all the semantic information that helps you shop. So that's one portion. The next portion is that more and more people are able to just take their phone, take a picture, and Google or Pinterest or Facebook are able to say, hey, we actually know this is a painting by this artist, and you can buy it here on Etsy, on Redbubble, on whatever. Visual search is very, very important for some companies. So those are two elements. But then some of the B2B folks are going to be like, okay, great. We always talk about e-commerce, but what about us in the lonely world of B2B? Well, I've had some clients that had great success with images because they're, well, to me, mysterious diagrams that explained a problem in like audio compression that all engineers end up by having in this field. You can write a whole entire thesis on it, but what everybody looks for is that little diagram that explains why the problem is happening, at what level, and how to overcome it. Even B2B folks have great opportunities with positioning their images. Like, I know that if you have, for example, an invoicing software, most people want an invoice template. They want to look at what does this thing look at like? What am I supposed to put in there? visual search. So there's a lot of opportunities in there. And if you're not quite sure, is it for me or not? One of the things that can be easily checked is in Google Search Console. We always focus on the performance aspect of the web results. But if you go in Google Search Console, you can see your image performance as well. And for news websites, if you have a gossip section, let me tell you, the images are very, very important. And I have a trivia question for you. Do you know why Google Image was invented?
I don't know.
It wasn't a feature that was always there. It got invented because of Jennifer Lopez. So back in the day, she wore a famous dress, a very, very famous green dress that was so low cut and high cut that it's just impossible to describe. You just have to see it. And Google saw an explosion of requests tied to that dress. And they were like, okay, we need to show the dress. Yes, this is how Google Image got started for real. So image optimization should be important for some folks because, hey, it is that important for humans.
Yeah, I never knew that it was related to Jennifer Lopez at all.
Yeah.
That is madness. So in terms of image optimization, obviously I've already covered the basics on what I'm aware of, but I believe there's a lot more to what you can optimize an image for. Where would you say the best place is to start on that?
I'm going to try to not say it depends multiple times in this talk, so let's just get right to it. There's quite a few properties nobody talks about. So as you said, the file name is important. I mean, 001.jpg is really not selling it for me. Like, that doesn't work. Worse yet, I have pictures that I share for free on Unsplash because during the pandemic, I decided I'm tired of always seeing the same SEO photos reused by everyone. So now everyone reuses my photos instead. But bottom line is I can find so many people online using my stuff because I just look Unsplash dash series of numbers dash my name. Yeah, people don't even change the file name and ta-da. But imagine if you're working, I worked with a very famous phishing influencer. What is a phishing influencer, you may ask? Somebody who gets paid to go around the world to fish different types of fish and has multiple TV shows, literally international fishing star. And sometimes you don't get the right shot of the fish. So what do? You use stock photos, you keep the file name, and it makes you look like a fraud despite you genuinely being a fisherman who does really what he says. Yeah, that's bad. So another element is the format. I'm going to geek out a little bit on this. JPEG and PNGs are the common formats that we know. And then the faded GIF or JIF. So GIF if you ask me, JIF if you ask my husband. We're a united household, as you can tell. I have quick tips about this as well. So when we talk about format, if you want a picture that is lighter, you're going to go with a JPEG. However, for anybody working in SEO, creating client reports, if you're taking a screenshot and have to save it in PNG. Otherwise, all those like little details and the writing on there may get super fuzzy and it just does not look nice. There's a reason for that. You should go with PNGs that are heavier but contain more visual information, so it's more detailed. And then GIFs are just so heavy and funny, but they should, it's such a complicated story. Let's not get into it. So those are the formats we're used to. There's also the new formats. I'm pretty sure you've seen in PageSpeed Insights, use new formats, and you're like, let me ignore this.
Okay. Yeah, the standard serve images in next-gen formats, such as WebP.
Exactly. And what everyone seems to neglect to state is, yeah, these new formats are the future, but the future is not necessarily being approved by every single browser at the same speed, and it's complicated, and you need to have fallbacks. So it can be quite interesting because yes, those new formats onboard the compression in and of themselves, like great. But once again, you need a fallback because not every single browser uses them. So you need to rely on good old JPEG or whatever else. But you also have the URL path. So Google has stated very clearly, hey, we do look into the URL path. So if your images are somewhere, you know, on your website and it's structured and we can tell that's images, it's this, it's that, it makes sense to us. We do consider that. And now we get to the alt and title attributes. We know these. An alt attribute is what you use to describe the image, just in case it gets broken, you have something displayed, or if the bot for some reason cannot look at it, understand it visually, it relies on the alt. Humans rely on the alt. So if you use a screen reader, for example, also rely on that. And there's also the title attribute and the source set attribute. And I'm sure that's the one most of us don't know or are a bit scared. Like, okay, let me explain something, and that's going to be a nugget as well in there. So have you ever heard of retina images?
Yes.
Are you like me and you go, okay, that sounds like it's an extra image, like it's a little bit fancy, but at the end of the day, what does it do? Really? Okay. Yeah, so
what does it do ultimately? I've heard of it, but I wouldn't be able to explain it.
Yeah, because most likely it's your designer telling you about these things and you're like, that's great, awesome, you do you. I'm not going to contradict you because I have no material on this. But a retina image is an image that contains twice the density of pixels. So pixels are basically visual information. Huh? So that means it's genuinely an extra picture. It's for wider, like larger displays. And source set, that attribute enables you to say, hey, if you're like on this big display, show me the retina. But if I'm on mobile, like, please don't show me that. That's going to take forever to load. And nobody's going to get to enjoy that double density of visual information because we're on a like matchbox sized piece of hardware. So one of the most common issues that I find, for example, in e-commerce websites, the mobile version will serve the retina pictures. And you're like, load time is crazy because of this. Yes, you get to state what image should be used in what context, and nobody seems to know about this.
That's so cool. I didn't have a clue. I'm one of the people.
See, I'm so glad that we get to talk about this because this is genuinely important. So now that we have spoken all about this, maybe we can look at, well, the priority, right? Are you interested in that?
Please, that'd be amazing.
So there's different ranking factors. So it's not just what I stated previously, but obviously when we get started, if you are doing the basics of image optimization, make sure that the file name speaks for itself. Like that's really important. And sometimes people will tell you, yes, but we need this specific like numerical reference in the image to be able to find it back. Okay, great. But you can like still say red dash apple dash and then have the information at the end, but at least say something, not just like 001.jpg. And the other thing is the alt attribute is taken into account, but there's also another element. If you're going to have a caption for the image, like, you know, the little text underneath that describes the picture, that's also taken into account by Google because it's contextual. Like Google will look at the picture in the whole context, not by itself. So one of my tips is you have to be truthful about your alt attribute. Like one of the things I hate is every single page speed optimization article will use images of like cars zooming by at night on a highway. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And the alt will be like, how to improve load times. And you're like, no, that's a highway with cars at night with long exposure. Okay, that no. So you can't cheat with the alts. However, be free to have fun with the caption. You are describing the context of the use of this picture. So that's where maybe some of the keywords should be, not in the alt, because the alt is meant for something else. So that's something to keep in mind. And in the ranking factors that we have for pictures, you have, well, good old Is it discoverable, crawlable, indexable? Starts with that. But there's also the authority associated with the page that the image is on. So it's not just your image that works magically and like pulls everything. You need to also have the semantic relevance of the content near the image. So it has to make sense. You're not going to have a picture of, let's say, Pamela Anderson in the 90s while talking about Margaret Thatcher. That's just not semantically related. And the reason why I say this is a good like 15, 16 years ago, a French political candidate, a woman, did not pay her SEO firm, and the SEO firm like optimized every single image for the alt like Pamela Anderson and like sent a lot of backlinks, and she ended up ranking on queries tied to Pamela Anderson and didn't know why and wanted it to stop. Obviously, the easiest way to stop this is pay your invoice, lady. So that became like, it's an old school joke, but yeah, semantic relevance does matter. Like you can't game Pamela Anderson's image and ranking potential nowadays, okay? It also takes into account how popular the image is. So I know this sounds really strange, but think about it from a meme perspective. These images travel a lot. Google does take that into account. So for example, some popular images to describe certain concepts or certain things, they really do gain traction on their own. Like it's an added ranking factor. Similar images, once again, the whole meme thing taken into account. There's the caption, as we said, but also the attributes we talked about, the alt, the format, like the name. How long does it take to load the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, like that page, and contextual schema? So one of the interesting things is you can have licensing information now provided about a picture. So that's something to take into account. You can have e-commerce data tied to that image when it shows up in Google search. So yeah, that schema matters. You also get to say for media, hey, is this image actually a fake? So for example, there was a shark photo saying a shark is swimming in like a flooded mall somewhere in the world. That's a fake. It's a fake, like a fake news. You can label it as fake news. You literally can. So Google has made some great headway when it comes to all this contextual information tied to images. And most people don't know that. So one of the tips that I can give is, if you're going to start optimizing for this, use images to enhance the content of a page. So that sends a signal, like having the right picture on there. For example, if you and I were to talk about, I don't know, like topic clusters, you know what image we have to use, like that HubSpot with circles and little triangles, and yeah, that one. And it comes in different flavors because everyone has created their own take on it. But we know, we already imagine certain pictures being associated with certain topics. There's a reason we function like that as humans. Let's take advantage of it as SEOs. Use images to enhance the content.
Wow, my mind is, that's a lot. That's
yeah,
really interesting.
Sorry. I get super, super excited talking about this because I'm an image SEO nerd. So yes, let's move on.
So we touched upon around how the common sort of recommendation you'll get in like Lighthouse or PageSpeed testing would be to serve images in next-gen formats. Obviously, it's a commonly known that images can hamper a page load's performance. Are there any ways that we can tackle this, we can improve the performance because of the images?
Yes, so something that you should know is the web is actually getting heavier. So most people don't realize this. We think that we make things faster and faster all the time. No. We've been fixing issues. So what does this mean? It means that when the web got started, it took forever and a day to download an image. So most people didn't use that. You didn't have fancy backgrounds. You didn't have fancy effects. Everything was responsive because it worked that way. Like you didn't have to think about these things. It just adapted. And I'm talking very old school web pages, huh? And now that images are so used and we have animated GIFs everywhere, it just adds on. It can get up to like 50% of a page, just the images. So whenever I see like website is slow, or a client comes to me, website is slow, or this page is slow, I'm like, how many images do you have on there? That's the first question I have. And another thing most people don't realize is when you download those stock photos, you download them in high resolution. Like they're big, they're heavy. And obviously it's nobody's responsibility to compress them or resize them so it doesn't get done. So my first piece of advice is you need to look into compressing images. And that's important to start with. There's different algorithms that allow you to compress images. So it's kind of like a pie recipe. Everyone has their own. Huh? But when you go in Google PageSpeed, does Google actually bother checking if you have compressed your images with every single algorithm possible? No, they check against their own or the ones that they know that they focus on. So sometimes you will go to your developer and go, well, we have to compress the images because Google says that it needs to be done. And the developer is like, I've already done this and this and this to the image. Like, leave me alone. And the developer is kind of right because it's just an automated test. So you need to also figure this out as an SEO. Ask around, check to see the documentation, etc., to make sure that things are okay. Like you cannot just go off of what Google PageSpeed says. Okay, so let's get back to optimizing. Did you know that when you think, okay, actually this is, how can I get started? When you upload an image anywhere, you have to make sure, okay, is there something on the website that will compress this? Yes or no? And you, some people will say, well, WordPress does this automatically, et cetera. Okay, but to what extent and how well does it do it? Can you compress before you upload and then can it get compressed again? The answer is yes. It's kind of like a lasagna of compression. Yes, yes, it is. I promise you it is. And there's different algorithms that work for different types of image formats as well. So for example, Google has a compression algorithm that is pretty amazing. It's called Gwitsly. So it's named after a Swiss little cookie. And it only functions well on JPEGs, not anything else. So you know, like it's like the little details. So what can we do if you are an SEO beginner and you want to optimize images? Compress them for the web when you save them. Then make sure you download an app or a plugin or whatever for your CMS that will do it. You can also use an API to connect to other services, but that requires you having a dev to help you out. So you can download something like ShortPixel or Imagify, for example. Cool. So we can do this and it automatically does it on your website, but you need to make sure that the parameters, the settings are proper because otherwise you're going to end up with potentially crappy images, and that sucks. You need to make sure that you also can activate, hey, can I use one of those like next gen formats automatically? Like ShortPixel has a service for this, so they organize everything for you. You don't have to think about it, great. But you also need to make sure, can I go back if something is wrong? Because not all services do that. So what does this mean? It means that it compressed it and you can never go back and you're stuck with these hideous pictures. You don't want that. So as an SEO, always make sure, can I go back? And you start tweaking, okay? An even more basic piece of advice, if you download something from stock photo websites, just click on the option and like select medium, not large, and you're already halfway there.
That's cool. Yeah, I've definitely clicked large before or full size.
Yes, yes. And what you don't know is that the full size is like almost like a museum piece on one of those giant paintings, and you will never need that much image on your website, I swear.
That's interesting. So in terms of compressing images, you said there's different algorithms used. Is it by different search engines? So if that's the case, do you then need to use like or prepare for each of the different types of search engines?
So it's not each search engine, it's like each solution. So for example, there's I believe two developers that work with the Chrome team, and they developed Squoosh. That's one of the services. And it's not search engines themselves, it's just different companies or different projects that are interested in image compression. So I think we need to go back to the basics of what image compression is. There's actually three types, but things keep evolving. Yeah? There's three types of compression that you can have in the world. There's lossy, there's lossless, and there's glossy, which is like a mix of the two. So lossy compression means that it will attack the image itself. Attack is a big word, but let me explain everything behind that. Lossy compression means that you and I, we will look at this giant full-size stock photo. Your eyeballs and my eyeballs are actually not that great of a hardware compared to, I think there's like a special mantis shrimp somewhere in the world that sees way more colors than you and I ever will. So a camera will capture all these details that we don't need because we don't see them. So what lossy compression does is go in and remove, like rip out some visual information from the picture that we don't need to make the image lighter. So it's literally like taking stuff out of your suitcase. Okay, except that just like the suitcase analogy, at some point you're gonna remove that one thing that changes everything when you get on vacation. You're like, I actually needed this thing in my luggage. Where is it? Oh no, I took it out. So there's this pivotal moment in lossy compression where everything kind of looks like crap. Like you can't pinpoint where, but it's kind of like either pixelated or smudgy or something. That means that you have removed too much visual information and your eye is looking at this degradation. It sees that something has degraded. Yeah, I know, it's crazy. Once you actually realize what's going on, you're like, oh, so this is why the image looks terrible to me. It's because of that. So if you are given the task of compressing an image, if you see something in the menu that says light compression, normal, and then like goes to aggressive or ultra is like ripping things out willy-nilly. So you have to test things, because otherwise you may end up with some pretty awful results. And yeah, it's one of the reasons as a child when I had the internet and I would download pictures and I was like, why can't, when I make it bigger, it looks terrible. Why? Because that information never was there. So if you zoom in, you realize what's missing. And then you have lossless. So lossless compression is actually something photographers will use. It's because each image comes with a lot of information added onto it, kind of like a passport, all the information of where it was taken, what camera took it, etc. So all this EXIF information is in there, it gets removed. So it's kind of like saying, okay, I am going to lose weight by taking off my earrings and my ring. And you're like, oh, I lost 100 grams max. It's because you haven't really compressed anything that is fundamental to the image in the sense of visual information, not extra information. So when you go with lossless compression, the effect you will get, like the payoff in regards to load time, it's not that great. I mean, it's nice to do it, but it's not the biggest payoff. And then glossy is a mix of the two. So that's important to keep in mind, because that's one layer. What type of compression do you want? But then, like I said, you add the different layers of like algorithmic compression that you can get. So different services that handle this degradation differently. And usually you can like use a mix of multiple compression algorithms to get the result you want. So you could have like an API that does one element and then like a plugin in your website that does this. Like usually developers look into this or designers check into this. So you need to make sure that the quality is always there. You also know that, well, you're going to compress as much as you can, but there's a difference between what a mobile user will tolerate and a user checking your website on a giant TV, for example. So that's where the source set attribute comes in. So you get to decide who gets assigned what. So I hope that this clarifies things a bit more, because yeah, normally people get lost in the lossy versus lossless.
No, that makes a lot more sense. And I've definitely done the gone to the extreme and gotten rid of too much information on the images, and then like, what the hell's happened?
Yes, and you can't pinpoint it, and you're like, I wish I could understand what's the matter with the image, but you can't. Now you know why. You don't fight it. You're like, okay, it's just too degraded. That's it.
Definitely. I won't be making that mistake again. So another way, my understanding is, another way that you can improve like image loading is by lazy loading images. And this is something that I'd normally recommend for like, do you know, e-commerce category pages where they've, let's say, got 100 products, and for anything below the fold, I would recommend lazy loading. Is that something you would also suggest, or have you got any better alternatives?
No, actually, no better alternatives. Like this is absolutely what I would recommend, because who needs those pictures? I mean, nobody starts navigating a web page by the end. What we start is the beginning. So load the stuff that matters to me in the moment that it does. So lazy loading to me is very important. It can get super aggressive sometimes, so that's also something to watch out for. But one of the things most people don't realize is that there's a native way to do it in Chrome. It's like literally one line of code, and you get rid of the problem. So I would absolutely recommend focusing on this, simply because when we talk about performance, we have to keep in mind that we're doing this for humans. Huh? So without getting into the nitty-gritty of Core Web Vitals, we have to make sure that the page loads and lets you do what you want to do. So if you come onto the category page and you're like, third product from the left, I need this, you're done. You just want to click and move on. Like, you don't want to be burdened with something that has to load and then causes issues, etc. Like, just give me what I need when I need it. So lazy loading for me is a very, very good way to approach this. What I would make sure, when I say that lazy loading can go overboard, you can't have images that are really essential to the page be deferred. So your logo, please don't lazy load it. Like, I know this sounds a bit strange, but I've seen this happen. So this needs to be taken into account as well. Like, do it as a sensible human being.
Yeah, I've definitely never come across that. especially if like the logo's on like the top left or something. I can't imagine that's a good move. Also, at the start of this, you mentioned that you've seen some like positive effects, or it's been beneficial image optimization. Would you say that in your experience, the effects have like correlated with organic performance in terms of traffic, sessions, rankings, or would you say it's more this, or the correlation is lacking?
No, I've seen some, well, I've seen some direct causation as well. Like, correlation is like, we have a hypothesis that this is happening. No, we've had situations where, like I said, for B2B clients, including that diagram literally is what was getting them traffic. That page got no traffic beforehand. So that was clear. Another element to consider is when it comes to e-commerce as well. Yes, we've seen that improving the images themselves, like what was shown, was important. So sometimes you will just see like a photo taken into like from the front, and sometimes you want to see the back of the product. So including that has been important, and we do see an uptick. I have my own website because I have a wiener dog and I love the wiener dog, and I basically just write articles about dogs. I'm ranking on pictures. Like, I do get a third of my traffic from pictures, just showing specific breeds of dogs. And my wiener dog is a dappled doxy. So she ranks well on that query. And it's a very unusual type of like coat pattern. So when people look into this, they know what they want. And it's been very interesting to see that it's mainly a visual type of search for some queries. Another element most people don't think about as well is it can really, really help in terms of branding or backlinks. So what do I mean? Well, I know that some images, if you become the defining element for something, like the de facto how something is explained, like HubSpot, for example, people will remember the brand associated to a concept, et cetera, through visual communication. But there's also another element. Like I said, I have some pictures on Unsplash. Some of my clients I recommend, I always make sure that they have the full rights to the image, of course. I'm like, well, there's very little imagery for your domain, like your industry. Let's share some pictures. And of course, after a while, these images end up on blog posts, etc. It's a quick and easy way to get backlinks because you find the people who use these images and you're like, hey, by the way, you credited my Unsplash page. Could you just credit my real website? Or you go, oh, you didn't credit me, but it would really mean a lot. And since you already gave them something, it's just human nature to return the favor, and you can garner quite a few backlinks doing that.
That's cool. Never thought of it from that angle at all.
And there's one last element regarding this that's super important for me to talk about. When you take pictures, or when you select pictures, you always have to make sure that every element is visible for a human, but also for a machine. So for example, having a light background is one of the easy tips, because then the machine is able to establish much quicker what the image is about. So one of the jokes that I like to make is on my website regarding dog chewing toys, I have two toys that just suspiciously do not look like they would be for pets. They look like adult toys, and quite a few friends have told me, why do you have this thing on your homepage? Because I'm like, oh, it's a review of these toys. And they're like, but it's for your dog. I'm like, yes, it is. So I surveyed 10 people and 8 of them said, this looks like an adult toy. 2 of them said, my dog loves them. And we tested with Google's Vision API. And Google was like, definitely not an adult content. Like, they were able to detect the shape, figure out what this object was. They were able to read actually in the plastic of the toy. You have the branding. They could tell what brand it was. So images are analyzed this way as well. And most of us don't think about this. So if you're a bit smart and you realize, okay, so composition wise, what should I have in there? That's also something that helps get a boost. So for my Unsplash pictures, when I wanted to illustrate what SEO was about, well, we noticed something. Most of the pictures that are used is a laptop, and there's a coffee mug next to it. And there's also two hands, not one hand. I tested the one hand on the laptop does not work well, but two hands on the laptop, and the laptop has some graphs. Oh my goodness, is this SEO approved? So you know, it's like little things like this. I know it sounds strange, but it really does work. Same for invoices. You have to think about, okay, on the top left, what's in there? What does it look like? So it means that you have to fit into a stereotype of what we expect to see when we search for this visual concept. Like, just what's behind a lilac sweater? Well, the lilac sweater better be up front, like you need to see it. It can't be hidden in the background. It has to be like front and center. And it usually should be worn by a human, not a plant, not a hanger. Like, these are things that happen. So you have to fit that stereotype, and then you have to set yourself apart from the rest and stand out. But first, get into what the machines and the humans expect, and then add your extra oomph to it, or, you know, your own take on it.
Yeah. I've never thought about the whole one hand, two hand situation on a laptop, but I totally understand that when you go on stock photos, that is literally all you see.
Please go on Google Image and search for businesswoman. You will see that it's always a woman in a suit standing, arms akimbo, like on her hips, and there's a laptop near it. And obviously she is thin and she is white and she's in her 20s. Like, it's This is what I mean by you have to fit into the stereotype, but stand out as well or change the norm. Because if you look at what an SEO expert is supposed to look like online, that's also pretty disappointing. And diversity needs to be included. And machines learn from us. Huh? They learn from our biases as well. So we have to fit in, but we also have to correct sometimes some of these assumptions.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more with you on that. So I've got just one more question for you. Where's the best place people can find you on social media, such as Twitter?
So normally LinkedIn is just my name, Myriam Gessier. And on Twitter, you can also find me at Myriam Gessier, same, first name, last name. And I'm much snarkier on there, and it's closer to my real personality. Well, actually, it is my real personality. I love it when people tell me, great branding on this. I'm like, no, that was just me spewing whatever I thought at this moment, okay? But if you want to basically banter with me, go on Twitter. It's MyriamJessier.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast once again. We'll be back in a couple of weeks for your next installment of Technical SEO. That's all for this episode, but we're always looking for other experts to join us and give us a fresh perspective on technical SEO. So reach out to myself, Kira F. Davidson, on Twitter if you're interested in joining us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.